So as we said a little earlier on, new arrivals from Ukraine will only be allowed to stay in state accommodation now for 30 days under changes agreed yesterday by a cabinet subcommittee. Up until now, people fleeing the war in Ukraine could stay in this accommodation for 90 days. The committee heard that if current trends continue, whereby around 50 people daily require 90-day accommodation, the total available capacity may be exhausted as soon as this month. Nick Henderson is CEO of the Irish Refugee Council. He joins me now. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning to you.
What's your reaction to this decision by this sub-cabinet committee?
Yeah, we're very concerned by the proposal to reduce the time that somebody would receive accommodation down to 30 days. And we actually don't see how it is possible for somebody to find onward accommodation within that 30-day period. And that's in the context of refugees from Ukraine having very limited options. They really only have access to the private rented markets, which is very stretched, as we all know, or what's called the accommodation recognition payment. They don't have access to social housing or HAP, and probably don't have access to emergency homeless services through local authorities. So somebody would arrive today, say the 4th of November, and by the 4th of December, they would be told, right, you're now leaving state accommodation, and it's up to you now to try and find some way to stay here. So we don't think it's practical. I think it could put pressure on other parts of our already very pressurized housing system. And it could defeat the ultimate purpose of temporary protection, which is to keep people away from our mainstream asylum system, which is already under pressure as well.
But it would seem, though, the motivation here is to discourage people coming here in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's pretty plain, but they're already here if they're in that 30-day process. I think that's probably the motivation from government, whether that has any effect or consequence. Ireland isn't the only country that refugees from Ukraine come to. The vast majority are still being accommodated and hosted and living in the countries bordering or near to Ukraine. So while it may be optics, I'm not sure whether it will have an effect. And it's a bit of a gamble, to say the very least, particularly because of those wider consequences on our housing and asylum system that I mentioned at the beginning.
But I mean, obviously, as CEO of the Irish Refugee Council, you would want to ensure that those that genuinely need refuge, we can actually accommodate them, right? So in a way, Nick, it's in your interest also, isn't it, to ensure that those that come here are those that are genuinely in need of refuge, and maybe they also see this a way as you know, you only choose the Irish option if you truly are, fleeing the threat to your life.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I can understand your listeners thinking that as well, but it's important to note that in 2022, Ireland and every European member state made a decision to welcome and offer protection to all, in effect, all people from Ukraine because of what was going on there. It was the first and only time that the so-called temporary protection directive was put into play. So there are conditions around it, and it's not automatic. If somebody would have had to have been living in Ukraine prior to February 2022 to be able to access it. But if somebody does meet that, does fall into the definition, they are entitled to be accommodated and they're entitled to receive support.
Providing they meet those criteria, regardless
Indeed.
Of whether or not someone might feel that they're not fleeing peril.
We only have to look on the screens and radio here, what's going on.
I know, but equally, I get you, equally we can also see that in large swathes of Ukraine, life continues completely as normal. I would not like to live with the threat of a drone, do not get me wrong, but it's demonstrable that to a great extent, you know, life continues as normal in much of Ukraine. And I say normal in the context of a country that's been invaded by a neighbour.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say it's normal. There's been significant, even in those places which are less affected by the war, there are ongoing power cuts. Russia's targeted the energy sector in particular. I understand it in advance of this winter. I think the mayor of Lviv, which is a town in the far west of Ukraine, long way from Russia, has spoken about risk to them, particularly from drones, obviously. So yeah, sure. I'm not saying that it's a universal and consistent situation across all of the country, but in a way, we are where the law tells us to be, and temporary protection is something that all member states agreed to. And it's really important to note this, they agreed again in June to extend it, not from March 26 through to March 27. I think the moment for sort of amending or changing the criteria for temporary protection was then, but the member states didn't take it. So we are where we are in terms of the law. And I
But we
think
also do have to say that, you know, we do have a considerable amount of refugees in this country. IPAS centres can do a certain amount. You know, other areas of accommodation, the government have said capacity will run out in 30 days. And we also see, you know, a great deal of pressure, generally speaking, for housing. So, you know, something does have to give along the way.
Yeah, no, I recognize that. And we're working with people who are in the brunt of the housing crisis every day. There's people living in IPAS accommodation, many in Donegal, I know, who have status but can't leave because of the wider housing crisis. We've stood in solidarity with other organizations that are supporting people of any background who are struggling in a pervasive and ongoing housing crisis. But we, as I say, we're as a charity that advocates for people who are seeking refuge, we would be very concerned that pushing this right down to 30 days, it's 30 days, it was 90, it's a very significant drop,
Yes,
60
yeah.
day drop, would either cause people to enter the international protection system, which is self-defeating, or put pressure on our already very
But
stretched
in
homeless
fairness, I
services.
do understand what you're saying, but you know, like there, as I say, back to balance. I mean, Ukrainian people arriving here, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, they do get €600 towards their monthly rent, which is not broadly available. They do also get you know, social welfare, which is you know, not always applicable. You know,
Yeah.
there is some sort of a maybe perhaps we were, you know, generous is a horrible word to use, but you know, there has to be a centering of this if it is to be a long-term situation. It has to be fair, not just to the Ukrainians, but society as a whole.
Sure, I get that. And in terms of the 600 rent, that's only if you are able to access the accommodation recognition payment. And in other words, if you can access and find somebody who's willing to rent you your room or has a flat in that small flat in their back garden in which you can live, it's not something that I would be able to access independently and then use it to go out and find accommodation. It's given to the landlord, it's paid to the landlord. In terms of social welfare, while you're in your 90-day accommodation or 30-day accommodation, you're on what the same amount as somebody seeking asylum, which is 3880 for adults. It does increase when you leave your accommodation. So you would go up to what the full social welfare allowance, 180 a week, I think. But in our experience, that wouldn't be enough to enter a really stretched private rented market. Like, I'll take it back, and I know it sounds like I'm sort of going back to the or trying possibly to hide behind the law, but all member states have recognized what's going on
No,
in
I
Ukraine is a
understand that.
crisis.
Yeah.
And we made that big decision, first of all, way back in 2022, and then each year since to extend it. And now, as I say, it's
Okay.
extended to March 27.
What is the council's view on asylum seekers working in Ireland potentially having to pay between 15 and €238 a week for their accommodation in IPAS centres? Is that more agreeable to the council?
Yeah, we've think that this is something that if somebody's working in decent long-term employment, it's reasonable for somebody to make a contribution, and I'm sure somebody would be very willing to make that. There are a few things to say in caveats. One is that they have had this power for 7 years. It was originally introduced in 2018. It's never been used. So there's some fanfare around it now, and I'm not sure quite why. The second thing to say would be that I think it would be pretty galling for some people to make a contribution for their accommodation when that standard of that accommodation is still pretty poor, or certainly very inconsistent. There are some good places, but there's a large number of emergency accommodation places which are poor. And then I also, just to finish, I'm also worried about the situation of children in IPASS accommodation. I think that a third of our population in IPASS are children, young people, children growing up in really difficult circumstances without access to child benefit. And I would be worried about the possibility of this putting them further back into poverty.
Okay, listen, thank you very much for that. I do appreciate all of your time this morning. That's Nick Henderson there, who is CEO of the Irish Refugee Council. Of course, there's many children, unfortunately, in poverty in this country.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91 26025.
Okay, it's 10:33 on this Tuesday, the 4th of November, and it's time for this week's Community Garda information. And I'm joined in studio by Garda Sean Swinney from the Buncrana Garda Station. Sean, good morning to you.
Morning, Greg.
How are you keeping?
Ah, good, man.
You, like many, had to deal with the traffic this morning?
I did, yeah. I got okay. Caught up on it.
It's good to have you with us, though, nonetheless. Okay, quite a bit to get through. So let's begin with appeals and a missing person appeal to begin with.
Yeah, we're seeking assistance in tracing the whereabouts of 37-year-old Kira O'Callaghan, reported missing from a home in St. Johnstone on Friday, since Friday, the 24th October this year. So Kira described as being approximately 5'4" in height, with mid-shoulder length brown hair and brown eyes. When last seen, Kira was wearing black leggings, a black fur jacket and pink and white Nike runners. We and Kira's family are very concerned for her well-being. So anybody's information on Kira's whereabouts, please contact Letterkenny 91671100 or the confidential line 1800 666 111. There is a photograph of Kira posted on a Garda Síochána missing person Facebook page and also the Garda Síochána Donegal Facebook page for reference.
Yeah, and it's important to share those posts because it spreads the word widely.
Absolutely,
as
yeah.
Well, because you never know where it might need to reach. So always good to share those posts. And we hope Kira comes home safe sooner rather than later. People very concerned for her. Right, now, fatal road traffic collision, the subject of the next appeal.
Yeah, we're looking for witnesses. A fatal road traffic collision happened in Kilrain on Wednesday, 29th October. A single vehicle was involved. It occurred on the R262 at Tunney na Glagan at approximately 3:50 p.m. A woman in her 80s was pronounced dead at the scene, and a man in his 80s was taken to Letterkenny University Hospital for non-life-threatening injuries. So our appeal is a witness collision. Anybody who's in the road, dashcam footage of travelling the area between 3:30 and 4 p.m, please make it available to investigating Gardaí in Ballyshannon. You can call them 98-58-530. Again, the confidential line.
Now, a couple of burglaries, the centre of the next appeals. We'll start in Clohan.
Yeah, occurred in the area of Glacier Divot, Clohan, in the early hours of Saturday, the 1st of November, at approximately 4:50 a.m. Resident woke up when he heard loud bangs at the rear door, and he heard a man's voice in the kitchen. He got up and dressed and heard a vehicle take off from the house at speed. The rear door of the house had been forced open. Thankfully, nothing was stolen. So our appeal to anybody who was travelling that general area and his dash cam footage between 4 a.m. and 5:30 a.m, make it available. Or any relevant information, contact again Ballyshannon 98-58-530 or the confidential line.
Yeah, and burglary is never nice to hear, but it feels particularly sinister when the homeowner is awoken in the process. Thankfully, nothing taken, no one injured. The Port Road in Letterkenny next.
Yeah, this is Wednesday the 29th of October, approximately 4 a.m. and 4:30 a.m. Burglary occurred at the business premises in the Port Road. The premises in question is the same stretch of the road as the ATU, but on the other side of the road. Damage is caused to the front door, but it remained closed. The rear door had been forced open. Entries believed to be gained, but nothing was stolen. So our appeal is anybody who travel along the stretch of road with dash cam again between 3:30 and 5 a.m. on October 29th, make it available, or any information, contact Letty Kenny, 91 67 100.
And just in relation to the dash cam, you're not asking people necessarily to go through their dash cam footage. It's if you were in that area in and around those times, the Gardaí will download that footage and then they will have a look through it to see if there's anything of importance in the investigation. So you're not asking people to see if they've spotted something per se, just whether they were on or in that area at that time, and you guys will download that and look after that. Just we say it from time to time, but it's just to be clear. You don't have to look through it yourself and see if you spot anything. The Gardaí can piece that together with other information as well. Another theft from a van, this time in Convoy.
Yeah, in Calhoun Convoy, between 10 p.m. on Wednesday, 29th October, and 9 a.m. on Thursday, the 30th. Unlocked van was parked at the rear of the house, and a substantial amount of Milwaukee tools were stolen. No damage was caused to the van. So our appeal, anybody who observed any suspicious activity or vehicles in that area, contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon, again 98-58-530. Anybody come across Milwaukee tools for sale on a second-hand basis, we ask them, please let us know and we can check it out.
Yeah, and they're really popular, highly sought after, and I don't think anyone wants to benefit from ill-gotten gains at the expense of potentially a business person there. Vehicles targeted again in Donegal Town.
Yeah, a couple of theft incidents between 7 p.m. Monday 27 October and midday on Tuesday 28th. Unlocked car was entered the property of Ross Moore, Drumroosk West, Donegal Town. A wallet, black in colour, the brand was Pull and Bear, was stolen. The wallet contained black bank card, driving licence and a small amount of cash. And then between 11 p.m. on Wednesday 29th and 11 a.m. on Thursday 30th, unlocked van again was entered, Drum Lonaghan, Donegal Town. A substantial amount of cash was stolen. Again, where we're looking for anybody's relevant information, witness anything, please contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon, 98-58-530.
All right. Now, criminal damage in Buncrana.
Sorry,
we might do, if you don't mind?
Yeah.
Because we did reference this, and I want to, if we have some advice in relation to this, maybe, you know, I know it's kind of obvious, but we're seeing quite a bit of this happening. So just to reiterate that.
Exactly, Greg. Yeah, so Karen Dunnevary and Release City, there are two similar types of incidents. A lot of cars are entered and items stolen during mass time. So a male youth was identified for those incidents and it's now been dealt with under the juvenile liaison scheme. So look, these are, you can see, are on the rise. We've had a number of incidents in Donegal Town and an associated arrest mentioned in our last week's appeals. Look, security advice, don't leave your car unlocked. If you do, please, especially at home as well, because it is happening at home and any other place, don't leave any valuables, cash, jewellery, electronics. Keep it in a well-lit location if you can. Don't keep your tools, and if you have to, keep it locked. Please, if you can, if you have tools, get them properly marked. You know, there's a community areas there where we can get marked tools there with your air code and such. And also any suspicious activity, if you think something doesn't feel right, let us know and we'll check it out. Yeah. And if it's not, then it's nothing.
And it's not victim blaming at all, and our listeners understand that. But, you know, if you have something on show, and I've been guilty of this and I'll put my hands up, but if you have something on show, even an empty laptop bag, that can be enough to try the doors. And if the doors are open, just to lift it or to smash a window. And you wonder, you see so many back windows smashed. You do wonder often are a lot of these as a result of this type of incident, but I don't know. Right, so it's good advice. And, you know, these people are active out there, so we have to best protect ourselves from being the victims. Right, sorry, I jumped the gun there. Can we go to Sleafnach now?
Yeah, so it says Sleafnach, Buncrana. Incident of criminal damage between midnight on 9 a.m. on Wednesday, the 29th of October. A car was parked at that location. The front passenger side window was smashed. Nothing was stolen from within. So if anybody's any relevant information, we ask them to contact Buncrana on 93205 40.
And criminal damage in Churchill as well.
Yeah, and the area of Keelogues and Churchill, shortly after 9:30 p.m. on Friday the 31st of October, used to believe to lit fireworks outside a house, and when they ignited, they caused substantial damage to the front fence. So if anybody observed a group of youth in that area, travelled again with dash cam between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m, we asked them to contact Mulford on 915-3060.
Right, and the Keelogues area of Churchill shortly after 9:30 p.m. on Friday the 31st of October, which was Halloween night. Okay. And just on now to an incident at the town park in Letterkenny.
Yes, occurred in Bernard McGinchy Town Park, Letterkenny, Friday the 31st of October between 10 p.m. and 11 p.m. So as part of our investigation, again, it's dash cam footage or maybe mobile phone footage from the park itself. If anybody's in that area of Town Park and observed an altercation taking place between those times, we ask to contact Letterkenny on 9167100.
Again, Halloween night between 10 and 11 p.m. Any info? Right, some positive news in the fight against drugs this week again, actually. We had major seizures last week and again this week.
Yeah, the Divisional Drugs Unit carried out an operation seizing supply of drugs in the Letterkenny area on the evening of November the 2nd. Two men were arrested after found in possession of a large quantity of cannabis. A number of follow-up searches took place and further controlled drugs and fireworks were seized. The two men were then charged and bailed to appear before Letterkenny District Court. We'd like to thank the public for their support and assistance with our efforts to tackle seizing supply of drugs. In line with that, look, we always look for appeal. If anybody's any information in Donegal, anywhere in Donegal, we have a Divisional Drugs Unit who you can contact in confidence. We're based in Letterkenny. You can contact them on 9167100. And there's also the Garda Confidential Line or any Garda station.
Right, now, scams never go away. They're like taxes. There's another one for businesses to be aware of.
Yeah, it is non-stop. So in this instance here, there was a recent attempted fraud. A person called a business and requested to buy goods at a substantial value, then completed the purchase with a credit card. And the transaction initially went through and then rejected by the card issuer. A short time later, another person called the business and explained that the fraudulent transaction was attempted on the wife's credit card but had been cancelled. This caller rang from another country. Thankfully, the business wasn't at a loss. So look, we want to make business owner aware this type of fraud is occurring. Advise your staff not to take any payment from an unknown person, particularly when the goods are of substantial value.
Yeah, especially remotely over the phones. You're leaving yourself open, aren't you?
I know you have online shopping, but you kind of need to know who it is who's buying from you. Mm. So unless you can verify the identity, we'd advise you not to accept payment over the phone. Unless you're familiar with the buyer and you know they're trustworthy, you can verify who they are by them giving you name over the phone. Especially now with Christmas coming up and new staff coming in, they're aware that these type of scams are in place. If they're unsure, ask a more senior member of staff what to do. It only takes a minute.
Yeah, exactly. If in doubt, you're right too. A lot of companies, which is great, taking on seasonal staff, they probably haven't been through any training that was there. Yeah. So just to make sure. Okay. Right, a couple of questions, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
A caller says, are tractors allowed to have bright lights on the back shining? They believe that they're very blinding when driving behind them.
So agricultural tractors have to be equipped with the full lighting system, which is side lamps, headlamps, rear lamps, stop lamps, direction indicators, and a number of places lit up at all time. So look, work or ploughing lamps are fitted to the back of agricultural tractors to give them extra visibility on the work on the farm. They may be used in private area like a field or farmyard, but it's illegal to use them on a public road, so they must be switched off beforehand. So my advice, if you come across that, you ring the local Gardaí and let them know that this tractor's blind you, and hopefully Carrick can make them aware of
and
what they're doing.
And just double check if you're driving one of these vehicles. It's very easy to accidentally leave them on.
Exactly,
Just double check. And also, you might think you're doing the right thing. Maybe you've got if you're drawing a long piece of equipment, but the law is the law. Where can I get high-vis vests and or armbands? Ask another listener.
So there's just five high-vis vests at Letterkenny Garda Station. Should any, this caller, anybody wish to, you know, call a station and get some. You can also visit rsa.ie and set up an account, and you can order high-vis materials from there.
All right, okay. And lastly, Greg, could you ask Sean who is the right-of-way on the Mill Bridge here in Buncrana, because it's causing an almighty problem?
Yeah, well,
you do. I travel Sean bridge. Sweeney has it.
I travel that pretty regularly myself. So if you're travelling from the old road towards the Mill Bridge, then you have to yield from traffic coming from Ricardo's Road. there actually is a yield sign there. So in light, any junction you come to, you obey the traffic signals. So there is a yield sign there. So you yield and come from the old road. Anybody come from a Carter's Road, they're the right of way.
All right. And do you find that people generally do the
way? Yeah, I find that people generally are.
I mean, you've got a yield sign, it's clear.
People are, in my experience, are doing it. Yeah.
All right. Great stuff. Listen, Sean, thanks for making your way down. Yeah. I know you had to deal with the traffic that many out there are dealing with today, so we really appreciate the efforts. Thank you. Garda Sean Sweeney from the Buncrana Garda Station, and that was this Tuesday's Community Garda Information. It's back live for you on the show next Tuesday, just after the 10 o'clock news. And don't forget, if you missed anything there, you want to listen or watch back, it's going to be available on our social media and on Garda Síochána's social media, and of course on the podcast live on our website from about 12:30. Now, US President Donald Trump has ordered the preparation of plans for military action in Nigeria. He says it's to tackle Islamist militant groups and has accused the government there of not doing enough to halt the killing of Christians. Trump did not say which killings he was referring to, but claims of a genocide against Nigeria's Christians have been circulating in recent weeks and months in some right-wing US circles. Reverend Mark Lockridge is pastor of New Life Fellowship and Milford Reformed Presbyterian Church. You're watching on with what's going on in Nigeria, and I'm sure sharing a lot of the concerns a lot of people have.
Yes, indeed, Greg. Thanks for having me on. Thank you for covering this story. One of the things I find is a lot of stories like this, not so much the Trump angle, but a lot of other stories about persecution across the globe don't get covered at all by the media. And so it's refreshing to be on to talk about it. I suppose part of my own interest is stems from a way back. You know, my dad was a missionary in Ethiopia. We had, way back in the 60s and the 80s, we had men from Ethiopia who had bullet holes in them because they'd been chased out of the country by communists. They were heroes to me. And then I was in Nigeria a few years back. I have friends in Nigeria. And one of the things also as a pastor with Nigerians in the congregation, but also generally even before they were there, I want to have set before the people in church and in the wider world just the problem of persecution around the globe, because it's a global phenomenon.
Yeah, for sure. What's the religious makeup of Nigeria?
Religious makeup of Nigeria, mostly to the south, mostly Christian nominally or by name, and to the north, mostly Muslim. That tends to be. But there's Christians in the north who then feel the pressure of you know, get out, or they're the ones that are often finding themselves under attack.
Yeah, and Christians are often kidnapped, killed. Mm. In fact, you 2 degrees of separation of someone who was kidnapped.
Yes. Well, 1 degree at one level, because I know two sets of people. A friend of mine was kidnapped in 2017 and held for a month. That wasn't to do with Christianity.
Okay, no
as
problem.
Such.
Understood.
Although it was maybe a little, they were missionaries doing they were an optician. That was 2017. And one of the things to point out with the violence in Nigeria is there's a whole mix of stuff. Some of it is just financially motivated. The guy that was a friend of mine was probably kidnapped not because he was a Christian, but because they wanted the ransom, and that's fairly common. The ransom was something like ten million naira, which I think is about €6,000, which nobody in Nigeria really at ordinary level could afford.
Yeah,
but they were able to negotiate and set him free. So you know, there's a mix of things that cause of all the things that are going on in Nigeria, and it's not all religiously,
you know,
motivated.
I mean, regardless of whom it is or what the motivation is then surely, you know, the fact that someone outside, mm-hmm. be it Donald Trump, whomever, mm-hmm. in this case it is Donald Trump, is taking an interest, shining a spotlight on it, is encouraging, is it?
I think, talking to some folks working in Nigeria yesterday, some were a little bit cautious. Others were interested that he might provide support to the Nigerian government and to encourage them and facilitate them in taking action. But one of the things, just some facts and figures, this magazine, it came in over half term. I opened it literally this morning from Barnabas Aid. Centre page, 45,000 is the number of Christians killed by Islamists in Nigeria since 2009. And you could go a few countries across the Democratic Republic of Congo, and it's worse there.
It is disputed to some extent with claims that Christians are not being killed more than people of other religions, and the jihadists are running amok, killing people of, you know, all religions and none.
Yes, there is that's also true. But I was an email from a friend in Nigeria, and I wouldn't necessarily be happy with the word genocide, because I've been following Nigeria since about 2001, and the level of violence against Christians has been fairly constant the whole way through. But here's what this man says: people denying there's a genocide of Christians going on in Nigeria are people who have never had cause to run for their lives. Don't come from regions where constant running for one's life has become the norm and have not buried a family member in relation to these attacks.
The move by Trump obviously is to put some pressure on Nigeria's President Bola Tinubu. Is that likely to happen? I mean, obviously this needs to be addressed internally, doesn't it? But internally, they are claiming that, you know, there is criminality, but it's not particularly targeting. I'm not raking over that old ground, but you would imagine that this is to put pressure on the president there. Is there any faith from what you're hearing back from Nigeria that this administration, the Nigerian administration, might be inclined to take action?
Oh, no, there seems to be a willingness to take action. One of the men I was speaking to yesterday was cautiously hopeful that this would strengthen the hand of the government to take action.
Knowing they have effectively potentially the backing of a superpower.
But yet not necessarily wanting the intervention of a superpower, because Nigeria is a wonderful country, but incredibly complex. But just some other facts and figures. 13th of June, 200 people, possibly 300 killed following attacks in Benue State. In a single day, 27 killed on the 15th of July, 1,000 assailants attacking a village, 1,000 people displaced, 6,000 people displaced, unknown gunmen abducting a pastor's wife and a female church member. These are all things that have happened in the last 3 months.
Recently, too, what this does point to as well, more broadly as we wrap up, Reverend, is that obviously there's been an awful lot of media attention on the situation in the Middle East, rightly so, also to in East Europe, in Ukraine, but Yemen, Sudan, Nigeria, there are mass killings happening.
Mozambique, Democratic Republic of Congo, Myanmar.
And it's children as well. It's women as well. And they are being absolutely persecuted for a myriad of reasons. And I think the world needs to sit up and take notice that sometimes the level of attention seems to be based on the victim's skin.
Well, that was exactly the comment made by a pastor to me yesterday. Some atrocity happens in Europe. It hits the headlines. Multiple atrocities happen in anywhere in Africa, and it doesn't hit the headlines at all.
Okay, well, thanks for helping us bring it back into the fore of people's minds.
Well, thank you, Greg. And if people are interested, Barnabas Aid is an organisation that provides help support to Christians around the world. And if they're interested, they can go and look up Barnabas Aid. Thank you.
Okay, Reverend Mark Lockridge, thank you very much indeed. News on the way.